Aloha, I'm Jake Shimobukuro, and you're listening to Life Minute TV.
Over the past two decades, Jake Shimobukuro has proven that there isn't a style of music he can't play on his ukulele. Since becoming a viral sensation on YouTube, the Hawaii native has collabed with some of his biggest idols, from Jimmy Buffett and Bette Midler to Ziggy Marley and Willie Nelson. For his latest musical venture, the renowned ukulele virtuoso was joined by legendary drummer Fleetwood Mac's Mick Fleetwood. They just released a new album, Blues Experience, a fresh take on the genre with reimagined versions of blues classics. We were fortunate to have Shimobukuro back to our Life Minute studios for a second time to tell us all about it and play a few of the songs. This is a Life Minute with Jake Shimobukuro.
Tell us about the album.
The new album is called Blues Experience, and it's a collaboration with Mick Fleetwood, one of my all-time favorite musicians. It was such an honor to collaborate with him. It's kind of a bluesy-themed record because some of the early Fleetwood Mac stuff was very blues-based with Peter Green. So we did some old Fleetwood Mac stuff. We did some Gary Moore, some Jeff Beck, some Albert King. So we had a lot of fun with this record. I still can't believe it happened. I mean, it was just such an honor to be in the studio with the great Mick Fleetwood.
And how did you meet him?
So we met a few years ago. Well, Mick's been a Maui resident for many, many, many years. And so we've always kind of seen each other and met each other, casually. But we went to their concert, Fleetwood Mac reunion concert, a couple years ago, and it was awesome. And then we got to go backstage to talk with him, and we kind of mentioned maybe doing something together, just kind of threw that out there. And here we are. He invited us out to his studio on Maui, and we took a handful of songs, and we just thought, well, let's just see what would happen, if we played together, because we had never played together before. Everything was just live in the studio. This album is a result, of these spontaneous jam sessions, that we had in the studio. But it was so fulfilling and just so inspiring because Mick, when he plays, he's so present. And he plays with this energy and intensity that just inspires everyone around him. I think one comment I made after the sessions, I said he's kind of like a point guard, like on a basketball team. He just makes everyone around him play so much better. This was kind of new territory for me, so he was very encouraging, and he was kind of just trying to push me out of my comfort zone and just telling me to just go for it, have fun, don't worry. And it felt really good to have that encouragement and to play freely, no holds barred. Normally, I try not to overuse a lot of the effects that I have when I play, but this one was kind of like, all right, let's just go for it, And then he had an old Fender Princeton amp in there, which I had never played through. I usually would play through a Twin Reverb or like Marshall or Meso Boogie or something. So he just happened to have this amp, so I plugged into it. And it was just this tone that I really loved, and it just seemed to work, with this configuration. Jackson Waldhoff, longtime friend of mine, he's touring with me now. He played electric bass, and our other friend Michael Grande on keyboards. We just kept looking at each other the whole time, just like, I can't believe we're in here with Mick Fleetwood, But it was just an incredible experience, and I really feel like he pushed me out of my comfort zone, so I got to explore new sounds and different things that I never really explored before. So it was great.
Where did you record it?
So the album was recorded on Maui at Mick's studio. Mick lives in Kula, Maui. So one of the songs, it's the only original song on the album, it's called Kula Blues. So I guess, kind of pays tribute to the area that we're in. It was just neat being in that studio because it's on his property in Maui. And so she's got this vibe and this energy. I think one of the last songs we recorded was an old Neil Young classic, right, called Rocking in the Free World. And I think at that point already, I was so pumped and having such a great time that I think when you listen to that track, the energy on there. Normally when I'm in the studio, I'll sit and play, or sometimes I'll stand, I'll stand too. But usually when you're focused and you're like trying to, play. But I remember on that song, we were like jumping up and down like it was a live concert. I mean, it felt like we were playing at a stadium show or something. It was so cool. But that energy, I feel like, was really captured on this record. Another thing that was so magical, I think, about this recording is because Mick and I, we were all in the same room together playing. When Mick plays his drum, he's so intense. The sound of his drums was actually feeding into my ukulele and going into the pickup or the microphone on my uke. So actually, his drums were feeding into my ukulele, which was also feeding through all of my effects and my delays and my overdrives and then going through the amp, right? So there was this really cool synergy that was happening, I think, between the drums and the ukulele. Very conversational. There was a certain like gel, you know, to those two instruments. I think a lot of it had to do with just being in the same room and the instruments just kind of resonating together.
What are the challenges of playing the blues on a ukulele?
It was very different, you know, for me to figure out how the ukulele can work in some of these arrangements. But I think with Mick's encouragement, just telling me to, just go for it. There was a couple songs where I swear I reached down to my pedal board and I just cranked, turned everything on and cranked everything up. It just made me play in a different way to really just kind of go for it. And I think the ukulele is very interesting, you know, because on one of the songs we did a tribute to Christine McVie, you know, which was Songbird. And so on that song, you know, the ukulele is, it's almost like harp-like or piano-like, very beautiful and delicate. Even when I did switch on the overdrive and the distortion on that song, still a very like ambient kind of sound, you know, and Mick really set the vibe and the groove foundation for that song. He just started on this groove on the tom and it was amazing. I mean, he just like transported all of us, you know, with this groove. And then we slowly kind of crept in and then I started taking the melody and it was almost like the song played itself. At the end, you know, we just kind of faded out, but Mick kept the groove going. And then I remember when he ended the groove, there was like this silence, like this pause, and it was just something very special. And then he opened his eyes and he told us that he could feel Christine's presence with us in the studio as we were playing that. That was very special to be a part of. It was just this magical moment. You have that very delicate side of the ukulele and mixed playing, but then on the opposite side, you have on the other end of the spectrum, we're tackling something like rolling and tumbling, where it's just the drums are very like tribal and aggressive. And, you know, the ukulele is like playing all these long delays where they're just layering over each other with the overdrives and then the wah pedal, giving it a different voice and a different place in the mix. There was just a lot of just kind of covering a pretty wide range, you know, of sounds and color. That was very interesting for me because every time I switched over to a different sound, I felt like I was a different player for me. That was kind of a new feeling, you know, that I really appreciated. Yeah.
Is there anything else you learned from Mick while working with him?
Oh, so much. Yeah. You know, he wasn't just playing these songs with us. I mean, he lived these songs, right? In between tracking these iconic pieces, you know, he's sharing these stories with us, right? Of like Peter Green and the Beatles and, you know, Jeff Beck and Eric Clapton. And we're just sitting there like, oh my goodness, this is unbelievable. So all those stories and everything he's sharing with us, then we'd go step back into the tracking room and then that experience like translates into the next song. It was pretty incredible. It was very special and something that I'll never forget, you know.
Talk about some of the tracks.
Well, it opens up with one of my favorite Jeff Beck tunes, which was Because We've Ended as Lovers. We had Sonny Landreth make a guest appearance on this. And the reason for that is because I met Sonny Landreth years ago when I used to tour with Jimmy Buffett. Jimmy Buffett was a dear friend who really took me under his wing, you know, early on and helped me so much. I mean, I wouldn't be where I am today, you know, if it weren't for his support. So that led to me having the opportunity to do some shows with Sonny. So we used to play Because We've Ended as Lovers. When we were in the studio with Mick and we were talking about Jeff Beck, we talked about doing Because We've Ended as Lovers. I was like, okay, if we do that though, we gotta get Sonny Landreth in here, you know, because he's just so amazing. So that's the opening track. Sonny just sounds so good on that track. I think the next one was Rolling and Tumbling. That's a very famous blues standard tune. So we tried to do our little spin on it. The Peter Green iconic tune, you know, Need Your Love So Bad. I mean, his version of that is just untouchable. I remember the first time I heard his version. I mean, those first like three or four notes when he comes in with that lick, it's just like, oh, in like three or four notes, you know, he just has you. I mean, it's just unbelievable. That was an honor to cover that. We did Rocking in a Free World, Songbird. One of the songs on there was actually, it was Mick's idea because we were talking about a UK tour that I had just recently finished. And so he asked me, you know, he said, when you play in the UK, do you ever play White or Shade of Pale? And I said, oh, I love that song, but I've never covered it. And he said, you should do that. You should end your concert with that because that's such an anthem, right, for the people there. And then he said, yeah, I've always wanted to record that. So I said, oh, we should record it then, right? Because I needed to figure out how to work it out on the ukulele. But yeah, like a day or two later, we got into the studio and then we laid that one down. And that one was really special as well. Just such a magical melody. That's such a beautiful song. And it's one of those that one of my favorite ukulele players growing up in Hawaii, his name was Ota-san, probably my biggest inspiration for playing the ukulele. He had covered that song on one of his albums, you know, many, many years ago. So to be able to do that with Mick Fleetwood and then also kind of remembering and just kind of paying tribute to Ota-san as well.
What inspires you creatively?
Oh, what inspires me creatively? I think everything. There's just so many things. Sometimes it's watching a movie, sometimes it's hearing a new song, sometimes it's an interaction with a friend or something, or a family member, eating something new, you know, for the first time. Yeah, I think all those things, for me, it's just about an emotional experience and then trying to figure out how to express that. Sometimes, like when I think of songs, you can play it in so many different ways, right? It just depends on, you know, what you're trying to express or how you're feeling on that particular day. I've heard people say that music is the sound of your emotions, you know, kind of in a way. And the ukulele, you know, I started playing it when I was 4 years old. I mean, my mom introduced me to it and she taught me a few chords and I just fell in love with it. First time I played a chord on it, and it just that sound just made me smile immediately, and it brought me so much joy. And I've just been obsessed with this instrument, you know, for all of my life. And, you know, I don't want to offend anybody, but one of the things I love about the ukulele is that it's so easy to learn and to play. You know, you don't feel like you have to be a musician to play the ukulele. It's not intimidating, right? That instant gratification is what I think is encouraging, you know, for someone who's never picked up an instrument before. So when you pick it up and you strum it, you play it, it's like, wow, you know, I'm actually making music. When I get to share that joy with people, that inspires me. Not just receiving inspiration or experiences that you know, that help me, but being able to share these experiences with other people, you know, also is inspiring and kind of gives me these ideas and kind of elevates my spirit.
And what can fans expect from your show?
Yeah, especially now, you know, with all these new tunes, I think there's a lot of diversity throughout the show. I mean, like a typical show might include a spectrum of songs from like a Japanese folk tune to Schubert's Ave Maria, of course, some Beatles classics, right? Some Queen, Bohemian Rhapsody, you know, We Will Rock You or something, doing like a blues shuffle. A lot of my original pieces, you know, have influences, have jazz influence, bluegrass, some, of course, rock and roll, traditional Hawaiian music, a little bit of everything. That's what I hope people feel when they come, is that they, you know, we just hope that there's at least one song in the night that they can connect with, you know, and that's always important to me, you know, as I just always want to make sure that the music connects all of us, you know, and it brings us together and allows us to experience something meaningful together that makes us feel closer, you know, as a community. And there's one original piece that I normally play night after night, and it's a song that was inspired by a Japanese phrase, which is Ichigo Ichie. And Ichigo Ichie means once in a lifetime, or one chance, one encounter. And the basic idea is, you know, it has to do with people coming together and stopping to recognize that, you know, this moment with this group of people will never happen in the exact same way again. We'll never get back this experience in this moment, you know, the same way. So it's recognizing that and remembering to be present and to be grateful. You know, that's something that has resonated with me, you know, ever since I've come across this phrase. When people do come to the shows, that's my biggest hope is that, you know, we all get to be present together and to be grateful for each other and, you know, leave with an elevated spirit.
And what's something you take with you on the road always, something you always travel with?
Something I always travel with, you know, besides all the necessary things that I need for our shows and things like that, it's one thing that would...
Or any travel hack.
When I travel, I do have opportunities to speak to a lot of students and kids especially. And so a couple of things that I always like to share with them is, well, one, at the end of every show, I always mention that, especially to the kids that are there, I want to encourage them to find their passion, whatever it is. Maybe it's a passion for photography or science or writing, you know, whatever it is, I encourage them to keep practicing and studying and be a lifelong learner, you know, of whatever that is that they're passionate about. And then the most important thing is, you know, to encourage them to say no to drugs. You know, I've been drug-free my whole life, and so to encourage them to say no and to know that you don't need it, you know, in your life. And I just thought of one thing that I usually do carry with me in my travels is, because I have this opportunity to speak to kids, I carry a wooden back scratcher. If you've seen these, right? Yeah, so there's like a little, you know, they're usually made of bamboo or something, but, and there's like a hand on the back, and you use it to kind of scratch your back in places where you can't reach. But when I was a kid, you know, I remember growing up with that, and it's just such a simple tool that we would have around the house. I mean, my grandma had like three or four around the house, right? That back scratcher for me always reminded me of three very important principles in my life. So when you look at the back scratcher, unfortunately I don't have it with me right now, it's in my suitcase, but you know, when you look at the back scratcher, the handle and the curved hand in the front, I like to tell the kids that, you know, if you look at the fingers on the back scratcher, you see them folded forward, and it reminds me of people bowing, right? And when you bow, you're humbling yourself, right, before someone, or you're showing your respect. The first thing is, you know, when I look at the fingers, it reminds me to be humble. The second thing is, when you look at the handle of the back scratcher, right? To me, that reminds me of, if you hold it upright, it just reminds me of the lineage, you know, the generations of people that came before us to help us to extend our reach. And there's a term, it's Okage Samade, which means I am what I am because of you. So it's really honoring the past and all the people, right? As you get closer to the hand, if the hand is you, then it's all those people that helped to extend your reach in life so that you could have a better life today. So for me, the second part is to be grateful for the sacrifices that were made. And then the third thing is, when you hold the back scratcher and you hold it with the hand in front of you like this, it looks like you're offering a hand of service or to help someone in need, whether it's a family member or a friend or your community or, you know, your state or your country or the planet, right? Just offering that kindness, you know. So the third thing is to be kind, to be humble, grateful, and kind. And so I show them the back scratcher, and they're like, oh, so it's okay. Kind of cute. So that's something that I usually do carry with me. And I usually keep it in my gear case, you know, and every time I see it, it always reminds me to be those things.
Did you come up with that yourself?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I don't even know how I came up with that one day, but it was just, and I don't know why the back scratcher, but I just thought it, especially growing up in Hawaii, you know, it was something that I knew all kids could relate to. Yeah.
And what do you do when you have some free time? How do you relax?
Oh man, there's so many things. I mean, I just love spending time with my family, of course. You know, that family time is so precious, especially when I travel so much. When I do go back home, you know, the blessing is, you know, I get to be very present with them and to spend every moment with them. And that's really nice to be able to do that. You know, my kids love basketball and soccer, so that has become my favorite thing to do with them, you know, and to watch them at their games. We love going fishing and, you know, little things like that, spending time at the beach.
Are they musical?
Yeah, my oldest son plays the ukulele and also the bass, and my younger son plays the trumpet, and he likes playing the drums too. So I'm just thrilled that they enjoy music and they appreciate it. You know, they have that appreciation for music and the arts. I don't know how serious they're gonna be with it, you know, but yeah, it doesn't matter. They love playing, and we get to have jam sessions in our house, which is awesome.
Besides your family, what else do you miss about home when you're away for a while?
Yeah, if you take away family and friends, I mean, of course, I grew up just enjoying, you know, the ocean. I love being in the oceans. For me, that's always been kind of like a place of healing and therapy for me. I do miss that. And of course, there's certain types of food that I enjoy that a lot of times I find I can only get there. Once in a while, you find it in other places.
What's your favorite comfort food?
Favorite comfort food, I would have to say there's this dessert that's made with coconut. It's called haupia. It's kind of on the sweeter side, and it's kind of considered like a traditional Hawaiian dessert, you know, but haupia and another one called kulolo, which is made from the taro. When I have a sweet tooth, that's my go-to.
And how is Maui doing?
It's been a little over a year right now, but it's going to take years, you know, to rebuild. All we can do is provide our support, try to, you know, lift up the community in any way that we can, you know, especially for the kids, you know, that are out there. It's heartbreaking, you know, to see those kinds of things, even with Hurricane Helene just coming through the Carolinas, and now this new hurricane that I just saw coming toward Florida. It's hard to see these things happen. And, you know, if we all come together and we support each other, you know, whether it's financial support or emotional support or spreading the love as much as we can, you know, I think music helps us to do that and to be a vehicle, you know, for that energy.
Who are you listening to right now? Who's on your playlist?
Who's on my playlist? Oh man, gosh, everything. I always gravitate toward like the 70s, 60s, 70s. I like that kind of old school sound of recording, you know, when before digital, when things were still like analog and everything was played live, you know, that I love that sound. There's just something so magical about that. I mean, gosh, if we had access to like a real 2-inch tape machine, you know, and we would have recorded this whole album analog too, that would have been awesome. I love the live recordings. You know, even, I know it wasn't the most pristine or like the most perfect, you know, like not, you know, but I think it was a lot of those imperfections that just brought us some kind of energy and just this genuineness, you know, that I just loved. And I think when you're going to be playing it live, you know that we're not going to edit this, we're not going to just punch in, you know, notes here and there, we're just going to track. And when that happens, you know, it makes you play different. You just want to put all your eggs in one basket, you know, in a way when you play. And I feel like a lot of those recordings that were done that way kind of inspire that feeling. I love that, you know, it's exciting, and I don't know, it just makes me feel a different way. And even like listening to albums like on old formats, like vinyl, it's my favorite way to listen to records. There was a period where I started listening mainly to CDs, you know, went back to CDs, but then recently going back to vinyl again, it's like something about it, you know, that, I don't know, makes you just want to sit there and just listen as you watch the record just spin around and around, you know. It's, I don't know, it's so hypnotic. But I do appreciate the digital formats as well, because it gives you instant access, you know, to anything that you want to listen to, and it's all great. I think it just depends on what your intentions are in that moment, you know, when you have the time to listen to something. If it's just, you know, I just want to put on something as I go drive, you know, take this drive, or, you know, if I'm just going to sit down and, you know, have my coffee and we'll put on an album, and just for the next 30 minutes, I'm just gonna do this and sit here, right? I think there's a format now that kind of meets everyone's needs, you know.
And you've worked with so many iconic artists who have been some of your favorites, and is there anyone that you still would love to work with?
Oh, there's so many. I mean, you know, I know I've been very fortunate to have met so many artists who have inspired me. Jimmy Buffett he and Mac McAnally introduced me to so many people in the industry. You know, I did a Friends record, a collaborative Friends record a few years ago, and Jimmy and Mac also played on it. Oh, we had people like Bette Midler on there, you know, Sonny Landreth. There was about maybe 18 different artists, and about half of those artists I met through Jimmy. It's just really the people that I've been able to meet and the people who've really just kind of believed in me and supported me and continue to do that, you know. And Mick Fleetwood, he's so generous. I mean, he did not have to do this project with us, you know, but he's just so generous and wanted to give us this opportunity, and I'm so grateful, you know, that he did.
What was your favorite memory with Jimmy Buffett?
Again, so many, you know. The first tour I went out with them was called the Salty Piece of Land Tour. This was back in 2006. And so he wanted me to open the shows by playing the national anthem before we would start the show. Well, first of all, playing the national anthem, talk about being nervous, right? But then at that point, I had never played in front of that many people, you know, so, or seen that many people. He would send me out there on my own, and And then I would get up there and I would just have to play the anthem first, and then the band would come out and we'd launch into the first song. But I remember the first couple shows were little smaller shows. They were, you know, amphitheaters, but still, I mean, that's like 15, 20,000 people, right? You know, he said, Jake, no, just get out there. Don't worry, just do your thing. You know, just look them straight in the eye and smile and, you know, just look at the crowd and, you know, have fun. And then I think it was the third show we played Pirate Stadium or something like that. I mean, it was like 40, 50,000 people. And I remember right before I was going to go out, yeah, Jimmy comes up to me. He goes, oh, yeah, maybe tonight you should close your eyes when you get out there, because it was going to be twice as many people. He was the same person on stage as he was off stage. You know, he just had that heart and that, he was just so genuine, you know, so down to earth. And everyone loved him, you know, because he just exuded so much joy and just this love for life. It's still hard to believe that he's gone. And I know that we've been touring and so many of his supporters, you know, the Parrotheads, and they come out to our shows and we get to reminisce about Jimmy. And Jimmy has always just been so generous and gracious about elevating other artists around him. And, you know, he's done, yeah, like I said, so much for so many artists like myself who were just starting out that, you know, he really believed in and, you know, gave us just a wonderful opportunity, you know, to share in his experience and to get the encouragement, you know, we need. And he's always just served as such a great mentor and role model, right, for all of us, you know, as a storyteller, as someone who lives life to the fullest and someone who's just always so giving and so generous.
And then you were also appointed by President Biden to serve as a member of the Arts Council. Yeah, talk about that.
Yeah, that was such an honor. You know, I've been learning so much with the National Council on the Arts and learning more about the NEA's role in celebrating artists and supporting organizations that are so passionate about the arts and music. Yeah, that's been so eye-opening. And, you know, we talked about what inspires, where I get my inspiration from. And being a part of this organization has opened my eyes and inspired me in so many ways. I've discovered artists and organizations that never would have been on my radar, you know, if it hadn't been for the National Endowment of the Art. I'm just thrilled and honored to be a part of that, to have been recognized and nominated, you know, to have a place as a council member, you know, in that community is unbelievable. It's something that I'm trying to learn as much as I can so that I can take that information and that experience, that knowledge and learning from the other council members who have so much experience and are so knowledgeable, just learning from them and figuring out how I can take that back to other communities, you know, and share that, you know, where it makes sense and where it's relatable, so that we can continue to not just elevate artists, but to share the message of the importance of the arts and music, you know, in every community. In Hawaii, you know, the last king of Hawaii was King David Kalakaua. He was known as the Merry Monarch because he loved music, and he was a great ukulele player, loved the ukulele. He was a great ambassador of the arts. He truly believed, and he instilled it in the people, that arts and music is so important. It's what makes us who we are and keeps us moving forward. And that's so true. I think every once in a while we need reminding though, right? Because we get so caught up in all the things that we're doing. But arts and music, it's not extra, you know? I mean, it's really, truly something that we all need to remind us of how connected we all are.
And what's next for you? Or is there anything else that you still want to do that you haven't achieved yet?
Yeah, no, I just want to keep learning and keep collaborating. I think collaboration is so important, you know, whether it's in music or in media or in any industry or art form, you know, just finding creative ways to collaborate. I think the more ways that we can bring people together and do things together, you know, that just promotes greater understanding. And I think it's beautiful because there's a synergy, you know, that happens, and able to do things that's so much greater than some of what you could have done individually, right? And then it's more meaningful, right? I love watching when artists come into communities to paint murals, and you see how they involve like some of the kids from the schools or like some other members from the community, and they create this huge mural, you know, and they do it together. And then the pride that everyone feels that took part, even if they just painted like this one line, right? They're like, I was still a part of that, you know? And that's just beautiful. And I think that's the kind of experience, the emotional experience that you want to have with every event, with every experience, right? You know, that I was a part of that, something very special and something that will be there for a very, very long time, will probably outlive, you know, most of us, and something that will continue to inspire and bring joy to people. Thank you so much for your support.
More of this interview, visit our website, lifeminute.tv. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast, Life Minute TV.